I was traveling west one time at the junction of the state line of Colorado, its arid western one, and the state line of poor Utah. I saw in the clouds, huge and massed above the fiery golden desert of Evenfall, the great image of God with forefinger pointed straight at me through halos and rolls and gold folds that were like the existence of a gleaming spear in his right hand, which saith, "Come on, boy, go thou across the ground. Go moan for man. Go moan. Go groan. Go groan alone. Go roll your bones alone. Go thou and be little beneath my sight. Go thou and be minute as seed in the pod. Go thou, die hence. And of this world report you well and truly."
It's a clip of Jack Kerouac from his appearance on the Steve Allen Plymouth Show on NBC Television in November 1959. Jack Kerouac's novel On the Road was published 50 years ago, and there is still a lot that book can teach us. According to journalist John Leland, he's the author of Why Kerouac Matters, The Lessons of On the Road. They're not what you think. Leland talked to Steve Paulson about the importance of reading Kerouac's On the Road.
I think it's still an exciting book for us to read. And also, it's a book about how to live your life. I mean, Kerouac wrote this book in 51. It was published in 57, a period of tremendous change in the country. And Kerouac was figuring out how it was he was going to live his life as an adult male in this world. And I think those lessons are still important to us today.
Now, you mentioned there was this long lag time between when he wrote the book and when it was actually published. I mean, he tried to get a publisher and had trouble for years. And then my understanding is that when it was finally published, it took off. It became a bestseller.
He wrote the book and nobody wanted it. You know, every house in New York, every publisher in the country, every significant publisher rejected it and continued to do so for 6 years. You know, people look at Kerouac as a slacker, as a layabout. And Kerouac continued to publish manuscripts during the 6 years that this book was rejected until finally Malcolm Cowley persuaded Viking to publish it in 1957. And then, as you say, it just took off.
So it struck a chord right away as soon as it came out.
Yeah, it got a great review in the New York Times the day it came out and some probably helpful negative reviews elsewhere saying that it was an immoral book or a book about a generation you can't understand. And I think to the generation that felt it wasn't well understood, that resonated.
Now, the reputation that this book has always had is it's kind of the Bible for hipsters. Did it have that reputation right away?
I think the book has always been misunderstood, or at least it's never been understood in the way that the author intended it to. People have read this book as a license to go out and live your life irresponsibly, as a slacker Bible. And yet, it involves tremendous work ethic. And within the book, there's a great spiritual search. But people have always fastened on the search for kicks.
So when you say there's a tremendous work ethic in the book, I mean, as we read this novel, what do you mean?
He sets out at the start of the book, he meets the narrator Sal Paradise, meets the character Dean Moriarty, who's basically Neil Cassidy, who's going to lead him on the road. And he says from the start, it wasn't just because I was a novelist looking for material that I wanted to go. And really he is. We're reminded that he is a worker, that Sal Paradise is a novelist working on a novel, and that Kerouac behind that is a novelist working on a novel. And as he's going about these adventures, they're really all his work, and he's doing the things that a novelist does, looking for material, searching for the right voice in which to tell his story. And there were work role models out there at the time. You know, it's the time of the organization man and the corporations. And he's looking for a different model of kind of an old-fashioned productivity model that he can aspire to.
It's so interesting to hear you say this because the way this book is usually interpreted is that it celebrates the freedom of the open road, of living spontaneously, breaking rules and expectations, and being true to yourself.
What Kerouac did was mesh all of those things with the idea of being productive. You know, Kerouac's not a child of the 50s and 60s. He was a child of the 30s and 40s. He grew up in a blue-collar mill town of Lowell, Massachusetts. He joined the Navy and the Merchant Marine. He really believed in those you know, 30s and 40s, a man is measured by what he produces, not by what he consumes or how he manages a company. So he had to be productive in the way his father, who ran a print shop, was productive. And if you look at Kerouac's journals, they're punctilious about how many words he wrote today. Only wrote 500 words today. Worked really well. Wrote 1,500 words on this. As if he was talking about laying bricks or, you know, producing furniture.
Now, I can see what you're saying about Kerouac himself and how hard he worked to become a successful writer. But do you think that message, that work ethic, is apparent in the novel itself?
I think it's behind the novel. No one comes away from the novel thinking, gee, I want to go out there and work really hard. But yet the character Sal is working on this novel. He publishes another novel in the course of the story of On the Road. But there's also a sort of a conventional family story in the book as well.
Now, one thing that I find striking about what you're saying is that you're really shifting the focus to the narrator of the story, Sal Paradise, who is Kerouac's alter ego, whereas most people tend to talk about the more colorful character, Dean Moriarty, who is based on Neil Cassady. Why are you suggesting that we should really talk about Sal Paradise?
Well, like any good book, there's at least two or three stories within On the Road. And the captivating one that has astonished people over the years is the story of Dean Moriarty. And he is, you know, a wild character out of the West who leaves behind damage and babies and philosophy everywhere he goes. But the guy telling us the story, who's with us every word and is controlling how we see all these things, is the narrator, Sal Paradise. And he's the one who's growing over the course of the novel, doing the things that we need a novel to do. He begins by being infatuated with Dean, and at the end of the novel, he's in New York, and Dean is in California, and Sal is looking over the continent at Dean. And he doesn't really need Dean anymore. He doesn't need Dean to show him the road. He's carved his own life. He's now with this woman who corresponds with Kerouac's second wife, and he's, you know, in a stable family situation, or at least so Kerouac thought at the time.
Doesn't he really reject Dean Moriarty in the end?
He feels that they will always get back together, but he is no longer dependent on Dean in the way he was earlier in the novel. And there's a key scene when some of the women in Dean's life chew him out and say, you know, you're nothing but an irresponsible, no-good fool. And Sal sticks up for him, and he feels that that's where their relationship changes. And he suddenly recognizes that he's the older character in this relationship, and he's going to be really taking care of Dean. And it's kind of where Sal finds his voice in the course of the novel and where the novel finds its direction.
So you're really saying that this is a story of Sal growing up, of Sal maturing in a way that Dean Moriarty never really does.
Dean is fully formed at the time the novel starts. And in fact, one of the first things we learned about Dean was that he was born on the road, that his, you know, parents gave birth to him between Salt Lake City and Denver, I think. So Dean exits the novel basically as he entered it. But Sal begins the novel with the sense that everything is dead and his life needs to change. He's recovering from the breakup of his marriage, and his father has just died. And the first line of the novel, as it's published, is he talks about the marriage breaking up. The first line of the novel, as he originally wrote it, was he was recovering from his father's death. So he's kind of on his own, and he's got to find his way and figure out who he is. And by the end of the novel, he does that.
And yet Dean is a tremendously attractive character, especially for someone like Sal, who's grown up in a kind of a safer environment. But to see this guy out here who's a bit of an outlaw, who's stolen cars, who lives the wild life, who's not going to just buckle down to what you're supposed to do. And I mean, the consequence of that is, you know, he doesn't shoulder the responsibilities that he really should. But you can see why generations of readers have been so drawn to Dean.
Dean is a great character. I think the 60s grew up in Dean's image. And in the 70s, the same people suffered the consequences of that. But it's also Sal's book. And the important thing about the book is that the back and forth within that. I mean, it's really a wonderful portrait of a friendship. And if we only see Dean within the friendship and the love that Sal holds for him and we don't see Sal's growth in it, I think we're missing a dimension of the book.
Now, how do you think this book is read today? I mean, you're suggesting that the real messages that come through are not what people tend to think. I mean, it's not really just about the sort of freewheeling, shuck all responsibility, but it's something quite else. But I mean, do you think people actually read it that way?
I think most of us still read it for the sheer joy of the language and the sheer music of the language and that sense of possibility that we're not tied to, you know, whatever it is that we're doing at the time. But we can leave that behind us, reinvent ourselves in some ways, perhaps on the road, but perhaps without leaving home. But it's that sense of that there is a possibility for us to do greater things and do them in the company of our peers.
Is this a book that you have come back to over the years? I mean, does it resonate for you personally?
Well, I think like everybody, I read it when I was 17 or 18 or 19, loved it, inspired by it, and put it down forever, looked at it through those 17-year-old or 18-year-old eyes. For other reasons, I picked it up not too long ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and reread it and started to see different things in the novel. And that made me want to learn more about Kerouac and find out how this novel fit into his life.
I mean, obviously you found new things in there, but was it still meaningful to you, or was it meaningful in a different way?
It didn't have that kind of pop song release that it had for me the first time. You know, the first time you hear it, it's like the first time you hear the Rolling Stones, and wow, is that exciting, and you cannot believe that there is that much, you know, power and sexuality and just thrill in the world, noise in the world. But coming back to it as an adult, it was interesting to find that there was structure layered upon that story and that there were lessons within it, and that it was a guy grappling with questions of, you know, who am I and why am I here and what am I doing, that we all really do grapple with. And as an adult, you realize that those aren't questions that you grapple with only when you're 17, but you grapple with throughout your entire life.
So in the end, you're really suggesting this is a very grown-up book.
There is a grown-up book within it, and it is a book about, you know, it's a time, it's a book of the 50s, and the nation was captivated with this idea of adolescence. And this is a book about how to adolesce, how to become an adult, how you're going to deal with love and sex and work and identity and your family and your friendships. It helps you through all those things.
John Leland is the author of Why Kerouac Matters, The Lessons of On the Road. They're Not What You Think. He spoke with Steve Paulson.
I live.